Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of The Short Term Show. Today's guest needs no introduction. He's got a Wall Street Journal bestselling book. He's a TV star. He's all over the place. Pace Morby, how's it going, Pace?
I am so grateful to be here. Thank you so much, Avery.
Well, thank you for coming. I appreciate that. And for those who may not be familiar, which I'm sure there are very few, will you just introduce yourself a little bit? Tell us a little bit about what you do.
My name is Pace Morby, and I am a real estate investor and somebody who buys businesses that are broken, turn them around, and resell them off as well. And I have about 600 employees, 9 different businesses, 4 different partners, and loving life. 4 kids as well, which is the best part of my life.
I agree with that. I don't have 4, but kids are definitely the best part of my life too. And I want to hear all about that. So that's a lot of stuff, a lot of things. You're very, very successful. And I think that a lot of our listeners who are more towards the beginning of their real estate investing journey are like, oh my God, I can't do that. How did he do that? So I want to hear about how you got started.
I didn't think I could do that either. Like, that's the thing is, like, looking, if I wrote down everything I'm doing now and all the people that I have on my team and what we accomplish on a daily basis, I took that back in a time machine to myself 11 years ago, I'd be like, you're lying. That's physically impossible. It's not going to happen. 11 years ago, I was just a contractor. I was working for companies like Opendoor, OfferPad, and Zillow. So these are all big iBuyers. And at the time, about, I'd say 15 years ago, I was using Instagram really heavy as a contractor. I was just having so much fun with it. And the reason being is I had just upgraded all of my computers to Microsoft Vista, and Microsoft Vista deleted all of my photos off of all of my hard drives. I lost everything. And then somebody told me, hey, dude, you seem really pissed off about this whole photo thing. I go, yeah. And they said, you should just use Instagram. It's like all in the cloud. I didn't even know what that meant at the time, but you can just document your life there and then you'll never ever lose your photos. And so I never really used Instagram the way I use it now. I used it as just a documentation tool of everything I did, what I ate. I remember posting something about a dollar bill that I thought looked kind of cool. Like, I literally posted everything I could, and I would start posting stuff like before and afters of backsplashes of homeowners' houses I would do, or an addition on a house I would build, or these types of things. And I would use the word Arizona contracting as a hashtag, and I would hashtag every photo. And I get a call from Opendoor, massive company. And I ended up being Opendoor's first contractor they ever hired when they came out into business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. First contractor ever. I was their guy. I then got a reputation, and Zillow hired me. OfferPad hired me, and other iBuyers started hiring me. And back in 2013, so about 11 years ago, I took home my first $1 million, and that was for my construction company. So I went from struggling handyman, not knowing how to delegate back 16 years ago, hiring a coach named John Bohm, who's now the head mindset coach of the Arizona Cardinals. So I believe in coaches so much. And he got me to a point where I could make $1 million a year take home. And then I had a client that came to me and they said, why aren't you in real estate? Like, I see you flipping all these houses for everybody else. Why aren't you in real estate? I go, I am in real estate. What are you talking about? I am in real estate. Look at all these houses I'm touching. And this lady, Bethany, is like, no, you're not in real estate. You're a slave to people who are. And you think you own your business. You think that everything, you have full control. What happens when the market slows down and people don't hire contractors anymore? And I'm like, when would that ever happen? And you know, look at here we are, 2022, 2023, rates start going up like crazy. All of these contractors are losing work. I have contractors in Arizona that come up to my Montana home because they don't have any work in Arizona because people aren't flipping houses as much as they were back in 2021 and 2020 because interest rates and the market's slow and da da da. And so she explained all those things to me. She taught me how to get my first deal. And man, that's an amazing story by itself. Is my first deal. I didn't know how to fill out a contract. I didn't know how to comp. I didn't know what assignment meant. I didn't know what wholesaling was. I had no idea where money was coming from. This lady just took me by the hand and was like, I'm going to teach you how to find deals for me. And she did. And in my first month of working with her, I made $50,000. I found three deals for her, assigned all three of them to her, had no idea what I was doing. She was just telling me what to do all the way through the process. And I stupidly stayed in construction for another 4 years while doing that. I should have just quit everything construction related. I didn't. And I'll tell you why. I didn't believe in myself. I was so in belief of other people's businesses that I was like, well, if this real estate thing doesn't work out, by the way, Avery, I'm 3 years into this real estate thing, making $500,000 or $700,000 a year in my real estate business, net. And I still was spending 40 to 60 hours a week in my construction business because I believed in those people's businesses more than I believed in myself.
Wow.
And it was just a big mindset shift. It wasn't until 2018, so 6 years ago, that I went full-time in real estate. And here's what made me go full-time in real estate. I'd been running my wholesale fix and flip and creative finance business for 5 years. And then one of my largest clients in my construction business, so I'm running both of these simultaneously. This is like what my world looked like. I would run my construction business 12 hours a day, driving all over town in my little Prius, doing estimates, checking on jobs, do that. And then in between all my appointments, I would go to sellers' homes and meet with them in their living room and try and buy their house. And I would probably go on 14, 15 appointments every week in between all my other appointments. And I would really plan out my week and go, okay. And by the way I was marketing at the time, for people that are curious, I was sending out mailers, postcards, and Facebook ads, stuff like that. And I was spending about 20 grand a month in advertising at the time to get these opportunities for me to wholesale, fix and flip and put in my portfolio. And I probably put 20, 30 hours a week into that every week, and I still made 700,000. And I should have just put 80 hours a week into that. But what I was doing is I was putting 60 hours into my construction, 20 hours into my real estate business. And then my largest client in construction filed bankruptcy, and I had millions of dollars tied up with them of my own capital. And I lost everything. And I had to start from scratch. And so 6 years ago, I had no money in my pocket. Didn't even know how we were going to buy groceries on Christmas morning. Kids don't have, you know, Christmas presents under the tree. I lost everything literally 6 years ago, and I had to start from scratch. And the way I built my portfolio from scratch was I wrote down, I want 500 rentals. I was like, you know, I have a gold piece thing here all the time. I said, I want 500 rentals. And I have no money, no credit. I just got everything obliterated. I lost everything because this company that owed me money filed bankruptcy. What would I have to do to build a portfolio of 500 rentals in the next couple of years? And I wrote down creative finance. It's the only way to do it. And so I focused entirely on subject to and seller finance transactions and became that guy 6 years ago. And now we have 2,132 rentals in the portfolio in 6 years.
Short-Term Shop Plus has live and recorded sessions on the following topics: creating compelling listings, marketing your STR property, setting up a new listing, managing from a distance, finding and acquiring your first or next STR, live revenue management audits with the pros, analyzing an STR for gross revenue. All of this and much, much more is now available at your fingertips with Short-Term Shop Plus. Everything you need to know to have success in the world of vacation homes and STR. Please join us at stsconsultation.com. That's stsplus.com or stsconsultation.com to learn more.
That's amazing. And become that guy you did. And that's another question that I want to ask you about. So when I first started selling real estate, I started selling real estate because we were buying real estate and I just wanted to represent us. And I started getting clients wanting to buy short-term rentals because that's what we were buying. That's what my experience was. And I took them, but what I really wanted to do was sell luxury real estate, like every stupid real estate agent that's ever watched HGTV wants to do. Really wanted to sell luxury real estate where we lived in Nashville. And it just wasn't working and wasn't working. I was starting with these cheap primary homes. I got fired by my friend's parents because I didn't know where to find like the serial number on a.
I have to stop you here, Chris. I want to hear about this. First, I want to hear about the story about your parents getting fired. But here's what's interesting to me is like Avery Carl today would ridicule and criticize Avery Carl of all those years ago for wanting to sell luxury houses, right? Like you would look at that and go, oh my gosh, why did I ever want to sell luxury houses? But now you fast forward and you go, look at all these options I have. Look at all the ability to make money now versus the ability to make money back then. How freaking grateful are you right now that you're like, I do not have the mindset of an agent that all I want to do is sell somebody else's house. And at the time, like the mindset you had, and I've had these mindsets too, which is what I think you got to point out to this audience. Like guys, Avery Carl, who is your hero, a hero of mine, at one point she thought her highest and best use was selling somebody else's home.
I did.
Fast forward. Going through the crap, right? You got fired by your best friend's parents.
One of my friend's parents, not best friend, but a close friend's parents.
Are you still friends with that person to this day?
So they're one of those friends that doesn't live near me. So, you know, we comment on each other's social media and stuff, but you know, not like a talking everyday thing. But it was that I never wanted to pigeonhole myself, even though I just sold like $30 million in my first year of investment real estate. I didn't want to pigeonhole myself. I didn't want to be the short-term rental girl. And then once I said, okay, you know what? That's where the business is coming. I'm going to stop trying to be everything.
So you did $30 million in investment real estate. You sold $30 million in investment real estate, which means you probably made somewhere between $700,000 and $900,000 in commissions, which is amazing.
Back then, probably.
And you were sitting there going, I don't want to pigeonhole myself.
Yeah, it took that driving home from like 4 hours away, looking at that house and being fired to be like, what the hell are you doing? And I was super pregnant and pulled over and got some KFC because I was dying and having
pregnant
moment.
Did you get some mashed potatoes and gravy on top of that? Or what'd you get? Do you remember the order?
Yeah. Let me tell you, I don't know if they have them anymore. And this is like incredibly embarrassing. So they used to have these bowls that you could order.
Hell yeah. The corn bowl with the potatoes and the chicken bites. Hell yeah. Those things were amazing.
Yes. So I was eating this KFC on the way home at like, why am I doing this? Why are you doing this? Just sell the short-term rentals. And then I just sold I pigeonholed myself and then everything took off. But kind of, you know, same thing. You became the subject to guy. And now look at you go.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I was very specific. I mean, it's very similar. Like I'm sitting here trying to live in both worlds, right? And you were trying to live in both worlds as well. Of like, I'm doing all these short-term rental investment sales and I'm helping all these people get their Airbnbs, but my identity is over here. Right. And so you, it sounds like you had a similar identity crisis of like, I have to kill the old version of what I think I am in order to adopt the new version of where I really need to be going. What was so funny to me too, is when that guy filed bankruptcy on me, I had 43 rentals. I all bought sub-2 and seller finance. And I had to sell all my rentals to get the equity to pay my payrolls and all these types of things to get myself out of the situation I was in. So I had to literally start from scratch. And it took me a week to write down, go after creative finance. Like it was so in my face. Pace, you built your entire portfolio, 43 rentals, all with creative finance. And now you've got this blank on your page of, if I was going to go build a portfolio of 500 houses, what would need to be true? And it took me a week to just go, just be the creative finance guy. Do nothing but creative finance and say no to every cash deal that comes to you and just train everybody that brings deals to you to only bring you creative finance deals. It took me a week to like kill off the old version of myself. I even was like, well, this guy screwed me millions of dollars and I lost everything. And maybe I should just start a construction company again. Like I was almost chasing the old version of myself. I'd married that identity so hard. And now I look back, I'm like, what the hell? Again, like same thing with you. Like, what the hell was I thinking? Trying to sell luxury real estate? You know, it's a mindset thing. And I think people that are listening to this right now, you have to pay attention to what is your identity? right? Like, oh no, I'm a nurse. Like, how dare I believe I could ever be a you know, short-term rental investor? No, I'm an engineer. My parents wanted me to be an engineer. I have to be an engineer, or I'm a doctor, or I'm a this, or I'm a that, I'm a firefighter. Guys, no, you're not. You're a real estate investor that currently needs to keep that job to pay the bills. That's the identity. And you got to shift that identity in order for you not to have the same struggle that Avery and I both had. Cause that struggle is way too long for me. I wish somebody would have just smacked me in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I wish somebody would have smacked me in the face too at real estate prices in 2017, that I should have just figured out a way to just buy everything, even though I couldn't afford it. So you talked about identity, something I want to look at bigger picture identity, that identity as parents. So for me, when we started, I had what I thought was my dream job in the marketing world of the music business. And I didn't have kids yet. I think we had just gotten married, but I knew like, this is not a good scenario for when we have kids. My boss was not, they didn't believe in any kind of work from home. My boss was not somebody who, even if that was allowed, would ever allow that. And she certainly wasn't someone who was going to say, oh, your kid is sick. Yeah, sure. Stay home. Like this was somebody who would have punished me for that kind of stuff. And so I was thinking, you know, when we bought our first long-term rental, like, what can I do? I've got to find some kind of job where I can be home with the kids, but also be contributing. And couldn't figure it out, was applying to all these places, not getting jobs. And when we bought our first rental, long-term, the cash flow on that, which was a little less than $1,000 a month, was the same as what I was making after all my deductions and my W-2. And we were like, oh, okay, this is it. So we're going to go hard on this. And now we were talking about off camera before we started, we're going to Disney World today. And we have the luxury of living within a few hours drive of Disney World. So we can do stuff because of real estate investing and because of not working for other people and being dependent on other people. We can do stuff. Like, we decided to go to Disney World last week. And I want to hear, because I know you guys are very, very family oriented as well, being an entrepreneur in the real estate world has allowed your family to grow in ways that it couldn't have if you worked for someone else.
Oh man, alive. I mean, okay. So I have 600 employees, two really big buildings that house those employees in Phoenix or Tempe, Arizona and Mesa, Arizona. I don't go to either one of those buildings other than maybe once a month, right? Because I chose really great partners that are very integrator minded. They don't want to be on camera. They don't want to be out there marketing or promoting any of the companies that we own. They want to be behind the screen. So I really identified early on that I'm a visionary. And I read a book called Rocket Fuel. I've read it 5 times. It's such a great book. And it really ironically talks about the history of Walt Disney. You're going to Disney World. And it talks about, like, people go, oh yeah, the Walt Disney kept going and trying to look for loans, looking for loans, looking for loans. And he would got turned down 300 times before he got a yes. And that's when he built Disney World. It's actually not the truth. The truth was Walt Disney was such a visionary, so great and charismatic and elegant in the way he spoke. And he could vision cast, but he couldn't put a spreadsheet together and talk about how much money the thing or the idea he had was going to make money. So after 300 attempts and getting no's, he went, his brother, who he ended up partnering with, his brother comes to him and goes, hey, I know how to get a yes at the bank. Can I put a spreadsheet together and a proposal and a pro forma and all these kind of things for you? So you can get Walt goes in with exactly all the things that his brother builds for him and gets his first pitch. He gets a yes and gets a loan for like over $100 million to go build all of these things. And when I read this book, I go, oh yeah, I'm definitely Walt Disney. Like, Avery Carl, you are Walt Disney in your business, right? You have to have people that delegate to, that do things that you're not good at or what have you. And I was lucky enough to read that book early on that allowed me to set up a life where I said, I'm willing to give up half of everything I own to these partners to keep me 100% away from managing employees, touching payroll, running spreadsheets, touching any of that kind of stuff, and just do what I'm good at so I can work from my home. And so I bought a home in Mesa, Arizona, that the whole entire downstairs is a massive studio. And then on the main level, I have a big office. And if people want a meeting with me, they have to come to my house, because that 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever travel time to go to these offices is, I could be spending that time with my kids in the pool. So literally what will happen is people will go, hey, Pace, I want to meet. Can we have a meeting? I go, no problem. Get it on my calendar. They'll come to my home. Somebody that is, I have a house manager and she'll go, hey, Pace, somebody is here for your meeting. I will walk out of the pool with my kids. I will walk up into my office with a towel on and I will sit down for the meeting. I waste no time with the drive times and all the crap that goes on because you realize how quickly life goes when you start having kids. You know, Avery, you know this, you look at your kids and like 2 weeks later, you're like, you're an entirely different person than you were two freaking weeks ago. Your hair's longer. Yeah. Your feet are bigger. I just bought these damn shoes for you and you already have big, like what the freak you're, you know, that those kind of things. And when you realize that, you start setting up your life in a way that people always told you could, you know, like you have the pen and the pages of your book are blank. You can write down your life exactly the way you want it. You just have to execute. And so it's the same thing in Montana. Here I am. Actually, let me see if I can show you. Here's my backyard in my Montana. This is my turkey cam. Usually I have turkeys back there that are walking through, but I crafted an entire life where I go, all right, let's get out of 120 degree weather in Arizona. Let's get up to Montana where we're next to a national park. We've got RV parks and we've got some Airbnbs up here that we rent out. And let's go to a different part of the country and take my family there for four solid months and have almost two different lives that we get to live. That's impossible. Impossible if I had a W-2 or any sort of job. It's only possible being an entrepreneur and specifically being a real estate investor.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does make those things possible to do. And we've got a little house out in the country in Mississippi where I grew up that's really close to my parents. And we go for a month in the summer and, you know, let the kids are able to hang out with my parents all the time. My sister's moving back. So they're hanging out with cousins and running around and going to the deer camp with my dad, which is that could be a whole episode. But it really, real estate really is, I think, the best avenue to allow yourself to be able to open your world up, open your kids' worlds up that way, because you are able to, you know, it's not a sitting at a desk all day thing. It can be with doing content and things like that, but you're able to schedule it around what's important, which I think is amazing. Now, I know I can talk about that stuff all day, but I know our listeners are like, ask them about subject two. That's why we're listening. So,
okay.
Let's talk about that really quick. And guys, we're not going to go like way into the weeds on exactly what it is. You could pick up Pace's book. He's got content everywhere. You could follow him and we'll plug all of exactly where to do that shortly. But can you just give us like the quick elevator pitch of what subject two is for those who might not be familiar?
Yeah, of course. So I'll tell you what subject two is and then I'll kind of go higher level, like bigger picture. Subject two is the process or the transaction style of buying anything you want without using a bank, but simply taking over somebody else's payments. Okay. So I could go up to somebody and go, hey, you have a car payment on that car and you're having a hard time selling it, which is happening significantly all the time right now, right? The car market is imploded. I could go up to people and go, hey, you have a $300 payment on that car. Can I just take over the payments and start driving that car and using that car as if it is my own? Because it is. That's technically possible, right? I could just take over payments on somebody's car, make the payments on their behalf. That car becomes mine. I could do that with a cell phone. I could do that with a plane. I just bought a plane 2 weeks ago where I'm taking over payments on that. It's just the process of taking over somebody else's loan that did not require me to apply for the loan, go to the bank and ask for permission. It does not require me to use tax returns, a W-2. It does not require me to use any of my own money or hell, even have any money. There's literally no credit check whatsoever. Not even like I need a co-signer. There's literally no credit check whatsoever. So all of the barriers to entry a real estate investor has, subject to eliminates literally all of the top 10 most challenging ones and allows you to buy properties way more quickly. And I see so many of these deals, I have to turn down 20 of them a day. I just can't physically handle all the deals that are out there. So subject two is a way to buy anything you want. A business. I bought a business subject two, which means they had an SBA loan. Okay. This business is a flower shop. They have an SBA loan that they acquired or they utilized to go and build the business. And when they sold the business to me, I just said, how about I just take over your SBA payments? And they go, you can do that? I go, yep, I can do that. RV parks, mobile home parks, single family homes, land, big multifamily. I've bought all of those things subject to. So subject to is when there's a debt to take over, right? So let's say a car payment. But what if the person doesn't have a car payment? They own the house or the car free and clear. Well, that's called seller finance. And we do that a lot as well. But somehow, some way, I just got branded as the sub two guy. So subject to is when they have a debt I'm taking over. Seller finance is when I get to create the debt between me and the seller, right? And the last seller finance deal I did that was really significant was one of the RV parks I closed on a couple of weeks ago. Seller wanted $5 million. He couldn't get $5 million on the open market. Why? Is because $5 million at 8.5% interest, if a buyer came to him and said, hey, Eric, I do want to buy your $5 million RV park, but the interest rate I'm getting from my institution, my bank, is 8.5%, 7.5%. I can't afford that $5 million purchase price. But Eric is sitting there as a seller saying, this is my last asset before I retire. I have to have $5 million. I have to have $5 million. I don't care what your problems are. I need this $5 million. And so there's long days on market that these assets are sitting. I call the sellers, the agents, the brokers, whoever is representing. And I say, hey, it looks like you're looking for $5 million. You've had a hard time getting it. I'd be willing to give you $5 million. I just need you to give me monthly payments or terms. And tell Eric and I worked out a deal on that $5 million purchase price. I paid $5 million, but the seller gave me 4% interest, not 7.5. So I can afford double the purchase price as anybody else can, because the 4% interest rate the seller is giving me is allowing me to go and buy things at a higher purchase price. So for me, I have the ability to buy things at purchase prices that don't make sense for conventional buyers. I put very little money down, if any, and I get way better rates than anybody else can. And so I would rather buy a $5 million purchase price RV park at 4% interest than $4 million at 8% interest. In the long run, I'm paying way less at $5 million with 4%. And so it's just this fun game I get to play that I go in after every real estate investor and I go to the seller, go to the agent. I go, hey, what are you looking for? Let's figure it out. Let's just tweak a couple of the interest rates and the down payment. Let's figure out how to get what you want and how to get what I want. That's all I do.
So that's really interesting, because the majority of real estate investing, just rhetoric and education out there, centers around being the first person to find a deal in order to be able to get any sort of favorable pricing or anything like that. But you're saying being the last person to the deal sometimes is the best way to get a good deal.
Yeah. I mean, here's how I look at it. So I have eight sisters. So I, a lot of times, make these funny analogies. And one just popped up in my head. I have a good idea to like explain this to people. I would watch my sisters in their dating life. And so a lot of my analogies are circled around watching these eight sisters of mine struggle with their dating life. So let's say there's a bunch of dudes at this high school and they see this cute girl. She just moved into town. If you understand how stupid every teenage high school boy is and the approach that they give to this girl that's new into town, you don't try and be the first person. You watch them stumble, bumble, and screw up everything along the way. And you come in at the very end and go, all these other guys are clowns. Say, hey, I think you're cute. I want to take you on a date and I want to treat you right.
This episode is brought to you by the premier short-term rental Facebook group, Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members. And this is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth. That's Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth on Facebook. If you like what you're hearing, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, you can join me on a live weekly call to talk about your next short-term rental or ask questions about the one you already have. I am live once per week on Zoom. I would love to have you come and say hello. It's strquestions.com. That's strquestions.com. Come and join us.
There's such a significant amount of these opportunities that I just sit there as the guy watching the other 10 guys try and ask this girl out on a date, saying stupid things, lowballing her, offering her 50 cents on the dollar. Hey, I'll take you to Chuck E. Cheese's for our first date. That's basically a cash offer, in my opinion. And I go to them and I say, hey, I know what you're looking for. You're looking to be treated right. You have a specific purchase price in mind. You haven't been able to get that. You're probably retiring. You're trying to avoid taxes. I can accomplish all of those things by doing, I'd like to take you to a steak restaurant that's called Creative Finance that allows me to make payments to you over time. And you'll make interest on the money you carry for me. You'll get the number you want. You'll mitigate a lot of your capital gains taxes. And these sellers are like, why didn't anybody tell me this before? Like, because they're dumb. They're just a bunch of teenage boys thinking conventional real estate is the way to go. You correct me if I'm wrong on this.
Okay.
I go speak at short-term rental conferences, seminars, workshops, whatever. And I talk, the people want me to talk about creative finance, and I will for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. But then people go, but where do I get the deal from? And then I go, oh, that's the most important question. Let's talk about that. So I started talking about it. After the short-term rental shop is over, I walk out in the hallway and everybody says the same thing. I just wait for my agent to send me opportunities. That's how I'm getting all my deals. They're not, it doesn't seem like most, and I could be wrong here, but it seems like most short-term rental operators are waiting for people to send them a deal instead of going out and learning how to find a deal. Am I wrong on that?
You are not wrong, and you've actually touched a nerve here. So I have seen more short-term rental investors or people who want to invest, maybe they don't yet, in the past 2 or 3 years that just do not want to take control of their own destiny in any way, shape, or form. They don't want to know how to find a deal. They want it to be handpicked. They want to pay somebody to tell them where to buy, which I think is a terrible idea. I mean, it can work, but if you don't take the time to understand the market that you're buying in and know why and who goes there and what time of year and why and what where they're from and are they families, are they blue collar, are they white collar, you will fail. And it's been like kind of, I don't want to say an epidemic, but a growing population of short-term rental investors over the past 2 or 3 years who just want nothing. They just do not want to take control of their own destiny. They want every little piece done for them. And if it's not exactly what they want, then they're like, they don't do it. And I'm like, but guys, like, this is your investment and this is your money and this is your family's future. You need to know what you're doing and what you're looking for and why.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause I'll go to a 2-day and you and I have spoken at conferences together. Phenomenal speaker, by the way, guys, if you ever get a chance to see Avery speak, take the time, go do it. I go to these things and I look at their entire structure of what they're teaching. And I think what's happening is the seminar, the person that's putting the conference together is reacting to what their audience is demanding they want to hear. And what the audience is saying is, I want to talk more about design and I want to talk more about make my listing beautiful and the photos and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm like, y'all are not talking about where deals come from. Like, what is this? Is this an aesthetic conference where all we talk about is color palettes and this, that, and the other? If it is, cool. But what happens is everybody, after I speak, they go out in the hallway with me and I'm chatting with them and doing photos and doing all the fun things and meeting people, which I love. And the number one question by far is, but Pace, where do the deals come from? I'm like, they didn't teach you this? So I think it's not the conference organizer's problem. I think what it is the people that are attracted to short-term rentals are very aesthetically minded, meaning I really love the process of designing and putting these fun activities and these themes together in these houses. That's where I find my purpose there. Just like you, Avery, you dress incredible. You're very stylish. You dress perfectly. I look at that and go, that's very short-term rental people in my mind. No, I'm not. That's not a criticism. It's actually a compliment.
Yeah. I appreciate you not saying I dress like an accountant. So thank you.
No, you definitely do not dress like an accountant. You have absolute style. So I look at that and go, I think maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right. I look at that entire room of, let's say, 500, 700, 1,000 people, and the majority of them are there. 80% of them are there because they're excited about their next Airbnb and what it's going to look like more than they care about how do I get financial freedom. And then they are going, well, I can't scale my business. I'm like, because you're focusing on sheets and linens when you should be focusing on deal flow and negotiations and raising capital. And if you don't want to do those things, then fine. You're going to get stuck at two or three rentals and you're going to offset a lot of your income and you're going to be happy. And you may find some sort of financial freedom to a point where you don't have to work 40 hours a week at your 9 to 5. Maybe you could cut it back to 15 or 20 hours, but you're definitely not going to be able to build an abundant life with only three houses. So it is interesting to me how that short-term rental world, 80% of them are afraid to take control, like you just said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very easy to do because, you know, the design stuff is sexy and it's fun to pick out tiles and design things, but spreadsheets aren't fun. Ripping off a roof. Like we've got an apartment building right now that is torn up because the apartment building across the street has become condemned and we've got crime coming over to ours. Fixing holes in walls is not sexy. That's not exciting, but doing like a Rob Abasolo pink pickleball court is fun. And I think that's kind of the appeal of short-term rentals. And I think it does attract some people who might not ordinarily be into real estate investing, because it is easier to talk about the fun things than the, oh, let me go fix this toilet that somebody took a hammer to for no reason.
It's a good point that you're making, because like Rob, you're really good friends with Rob. I'm great friends with Rob as well. And Rob, that video that Rob put on his YouTube channel about the pickleball court, he's actually done that video two or three different times in two or three different ways. Why? It's basically tricking yourself mentally into believing you're doing something in the business when you're really not. And what it is I'm talking about the design of something, therefore I'm in the business and this feels great, right? Just tricking yourself. Those videos do really well on his channel. And so what it does is it trains Rob, trains me as well when I make my YouTube content. Oh, my audience wants to watch this. I'll make another and another and another. And then over time, the majority of the content that's out there is basically just mentally giving people their dopamine fix of, oh my gosh, I love design, yet they don't get any traction because that's not what makes the business work. I mean, Avery, you've got an apartment building, you're dealing with stuff right now. I've got an apartment building in San Angelo, similar. We're doing a roof and we're doing like 14 of the units, redoing them. It's only a 43 unit thing and I'm having to redo 14 of my units right now, which means I have 14 empty units on a 43 unit apartment building. That's a big deal. And so the whole team, right? That's another thing you have to learn. Delegation. Oh my gosh, hiring the right people, building a team. My team goes, where's the money going to come from? We need $150,000. I go, let me go find it. Right? That's not sexy. That sounds scary.
Yeah, it is scary. It is.
And if you told everybody the truth behind what happens in your business every day, me too, people would run from this business when you're brand new.
Oh yeah.
And so I'll tell you honestly, guys, if you're out there, you're new, we all have to trick you into believing that it's all sunshine and rainbows just so you take action. And after you get your first deal, you come to us and go, man, this is a lot harder than I thought. Yes. Can I tell you now how hard it really is? But I had to trick you to get you to do the first deal to get traction. So I really did you a solid favor, but going forward, you're going to have to learn all the hard things. And it's just the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do hard things if you want to do things like get to spend 4 months in Montana or go to Disney World on a whim. And yeah, I think that it's short-term rentals of all of the asset classes that I own, they really are the most fun, but you still have to treat them like a business. And I've got two more questions for you related to subject two that I wanted to ask. So I'm a big believer in learning from others. What not to do is sometimes better than learning what to do. So is there a situation, whether it's a situation or a type of investor, that subject two is not for? Oh, did I get him?
No.
There's not.
So I'll give you a funny thing. So yesterday I get an email from a hard money lender. His name's Sean. And he says, Pace, I got your email from online. Would you mind giving me a 5-minute phone call? I have questions about subject two. And I go, you're a hard money lender. You got my email. How freaking amazing is that you didn't take the time to just go watch my YouTube channel? I have 3,000 videos. And I go, sure, come into my Zoom with my students tonight. Every Tuesday I did a 7-hour Zoom last night. Every Tuesday, it's like 5 to 7 hours. I hang out with my community. And so I'm doing the Zoom. I invite Sean in there. I go, hey, everybody, welcome Sean. He's not a student, so my apologies, but I want to answer his questions about subject 2. And I already know what his questions are. Every single time. Due on sale clause. What if the seller dies? What if there's a bankruptcy? What if you stop making the payments? Like, it's always the same 5 questions every single time. And so I tell Sean, I go, Sean, you asked for 5 minutes. I'm going to give you probably close to 2 hours. Do you have 2 hours tonight? He's like, sure. So I go through and I go, let me guess. You have this question. And he goes, yeah. I go, okay. So before I start, Sean, I just want to point something out. And I do a screen share. I go to YouTube and I go, this is my YouTube. We're going to type in Pace Morby due on sale, Pace Morby this, Pace Morby that. And I would pull up 6-7 videos of every question he had. I go, so can we just say that if I don't answer your question entirely tonight, you can go to my YouTube channel and you can go learn these things, right? And he goes, okay, wow, I feel really stupid. I go, don't. I don't want you to feel stupid. I just want you to know that these are the same 5 questions I hear all the time. And the reason I'm hammering home on that is because once you understand these 5 questions and you understand the answers to them, you'd ask yourself, why isn't everybody doing subject 2?
And I think I have the answer to that.
Yeah. Tell me what do you think is the answer?
I think that just like short-term rental investing, subject 2, in order to be successful, you have to be willing to get in there and learn and take action and take control of your own destiny. And it's not something that other people can do for you because it is involved. It does take some time to understand and to execute. And I think that if you're somebody that just wants to be an investor, but not have to do that work, that, you know, maybe you go stick to investing in somebody else's syndications, but that's kind of what I come away with it.
I love that answer. I think that whether you're trying to do short-term rental, midterm rental, whatever it is, if you really want to, you could wait for somebody to send you a deal, right? You could do that with wholesalers or real estate agents and wait for them to send you a deal. But it's hard to scale your business to 10, 20, 30 properties if you're relying on other people's business to send you business, right? And so you're right. In order for me to go out and do more sub-2 deals, more seller finance deals, I have to go out and find these deals and know where they are and how to negotiate and how to do the paperwork and all of those types of things. And so the people making millions of dollars are doing that. The people making hundreds of thousands of dollars are waiting for other people to bring them opportunities. So I think that's a good answer. Really good answer. I'd probably say you're 99% accurate on that. Also, it's new to people, right? Some people just have not heard of it. It's kind of like when you hear about the BRRRR strategy at first and somebody has to explain to you what that acronym means. There was a point in your life, Avery, me too,
everybody,
where you go, what's the BRRRR strategy? And you had to truly break down each letter, what it meant. And then somebody had to kind of map it out for you. Like, okay, I buy it, but how am I buying it? Oh, hard money. Okay. Da, 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 and you go through it. The people hearing subject 2 at the for the first time, when they go see me on a whiteboard, I have a 45-minute video on my YouTube channel where I break down every aspect of sub 2. And people walk away from that 45-minute video going, holy crap, I understand everything about subject 2. But it takes 45 minutes. And surprisingly, people are not willing to put 45 minutes into anything nowadays. And so again, going back to your point, people just don't want to do the work, but they want somebody else to do it for them. They want somebody to spoon feed the deals to them and spoon feed the answers to them. And that, welcome to life. That has nothing to do with real estate investing. That's just human freaking beings, right?
Yep, exactly. And okay, last question. So actually, one thing that I wanted to mention was last time I was at Graceland, and this is completely unrelated before I get back. Well, not completely. Once you walk through the house and you walk through to the back, like where his racquetball court was and his office and everything, there is a picture in a frame of the deed to Graceland. And Elvis bought Graceland with creative financing.
I love that. I did not know that. Thank you for this.
I've been waiting for somebody who would care about that piece of knowledge for a year or two.
I freaking love this. Okay. So I have the coolest thing I have, my favorite possession besides my wife and my children. Yes. My wife is my possession. I'm just kidding. She's not. But my favorite things in my life physically, number one on my list is a deed that is a couple hundred years old. Sam Adams, okay, one of the amazing people in the revolution. Sam Adams dies. His wife says, holy crap, what am I going to do with all this property we own? And so she goes to the generals in General Washington's army and says, who needs property? I'll sell or finance these properties to you. And I have one of the original deeds.
Oh, wow.
From Sam Adams' wife signed off. Original. I have the actual tangible deed. It's like 280 years old or something.
Oh, my goodness.
It's framed up behind my backdrop. And she's seller financing 160 acres of land, no money down, no interest. She just says, here's my purchase price. She's written all in handwriting on front and back. It's a one piece of paper. And people don't understand how simple real estate actually is, because title companies and escrow complicate the way a real estate transaction is actually done. The way real estate has always been done is somebody owns a thing and they sign a piece of paper saying, here's how I'm selling it to you. And now you hold that paper. You are now the owner of that property. That's as simple as real estate gets. It is literally, here's the piece of paper called a deed. You have it. Here's the terms of that deed. I'm no longer the owner. You just make payments to me. And people go, wait, so it's not done that way anymore? I go, yes, it is done that way. It's just that that document now, we have been tricked into fooled into believing that an escrow officer and a title company have to manage that transaction. But the reality is I could go to Avery right now and go, hey, Avery, I like that house you own on 123 Main Street. Can you deed it over to me? Which means just signing off on a single piece of paper, deeding it to me. And I can walk down to the county recorder's office and record that document without an escrow officer, without a title company, and spend $17 to own her property literally within an hour. That is how it is. Every state, including Puerto Rico, across the country, there is no difference. That is as simple as real estate has always been. Now, I can even make it more simple. What happened before county recorders were even a thing in the United States? How did people sell things to each other? They just signed off on a piece of paper, handed you the piece of paper, the thing was sold. That's it. The only reason a recorder is even involved, a county recorder, is they go, hey guys, a lot of people are like losing these documents. Would you like us to record them on public record? So like, if you lose it, you can always come and get a copy of it. Oh my gosh, that'd be amazing, county recorder. Yes, please, let's do that. There's no need for a recorder if you don't want one. There's no need for an escrow officer or a title company if you don't want one. We as human beings have always and still do business by exchanging a piece of paper called a deed. You just don't see how simple it is because you got all these people grabbing at your pockets every time a real estate transaction is done.
That is true.
I need to now do the research on this Elvis thing. This is freaking great.
Yeah. And I haven't Googled it, but I can tell you where to find it if you ever make your way to Graceland. Okay. I have one more question, and we are 1 minute over time, and I want to be respectful of your time related to subject two, and then we'll do the sign off. So my last question is, if you're looking at a deal, or if an investor, maybe experienced, maybe new, has a subject two deal in front of them, I think a lot of people, depending whatever strategy it is, whether it's subject two or owner financing or it's a short-term rental or any strategy, BRRRR, they get so excited about, oh, I finally found something. Somebody's going to agree to do the thing that I want to do and use the strategy that I want to use. Yes. They lose sight of the rest of the deal. If you find a property that somebody's willing to sell you subject to, what are like some alligators in the deal to look out for to make sure that you don't make a mistake just because someone is going to do it subject to?
Okay. Number one, seller, cardinal sin. I have 10 commandments of creative finance. Cardinal sin number one, the first commandment is don't buy a house subject to or seller finance and let the seller stay in the house. That's number one. I know it seems like people are like, wait, what? Does that happen a lot? Yeah, it happens probably one out of every 20 deals I see. The seller's like, yeah, I'll let you take over my mortgage payments because I'm in a situation. I need you to catch up my 2 months of payments I'm behind, and I'll let you take over my mortgage payments and you can become the owner and I'll pay you more money than the mortgage payment is. I'm like, wait a minute. You couldn't pay the payments before. You fell in foreclosure. You want me to catch up your foreclosure. You'll let me take over your 2.5% rate, 3.5% rate, but you want to stay in the house? Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
There ain't no way. And so everybody that breaks that rule, they put in their portfolio, or even if they assign it and make a wholesale fee on it, It comes back and bites them in the butt. It's bit me in the butt so many times. So don't let the seller stay in the house. That is a cardinal sin. Another one is adjustable rate mortgages. They're not a big thing anymore, but you will run into them. If somebody has an adjustable rate mortgage that you're taking over, I refuse to have more than one out of 20 of my rentals have an adjustable rate mortgage. So be careful of those alligators.
Okay.
Another big one is if there is a small bank that you are taking the payments over on, don't buy it subject to, buy it on a land contract or a contract for deed. This is a whole other topic for another day. Creative finance, literally subject to, is the top of the iceberg. There's so many other strategies in creative finance underneath the water that people don't hear about, like land contract, contract for deed, agreement for sale, all the installment contract, all these dating contract. People, nobody's heard of a dating contract in their life. And there's just so many types of deals where if the bank is a small bank, they have three branches and they're the ones that issued the loan, do not buy it subject to, because that bank will find out and they will call you and demand that you pay them off. And so in those situations, just go to my YouTube channel and look up the word, type in executory contract, and I'll teach you how to get around the due on sale clause. So high interest rates as well. Nobody really wants a sub two deal that has a 7% rate, right? Like people send me deals now and they're like, hey, I have a $500,000 house. First off, it's overpriced. $500,000 house that has a 7.25% interest rate. I'm like, okay, so they got it 6 months ago. They're already behind. No problem. I'll buy that deal. But 7.25% rate? Like I don't mind paying $500,000 for the house. It's overpriced, obviously, or it would have sold. But I'm not going to do $500,000 at 7.25%. So really, most investors are trying to stay 5% interest or less. My average interest rate is 3%. And so when somebody sends me something over 4%, I really start scratching my head. I'm like, is this worth it? I'm buying this deal long term. Tomorrow, I'm going to get a deal at 3%. So maybe I'll say no to the 4% and look at the 3%. So when you're excited about a deal and it's 6.5% interest, just so you know, it's going to be challenging. Now, I could talk about this for hours. Another thing, another alligator is, do you know it will cash flow? And by the way, I do a lot of sub two and seller finance deals that do not cash flow. Why? Because I'm not the one putting it in my portfolio. What I'm doing is I'm turning around and seller financing what was seller finance to me. I seller finance it to a family who can't qualify for a traditional mortgage, and they don't care if the house cash flows. They're raising a family there, right? Like everybody that owns a house that's listening to this podcast, how much does your personal home cash flow you?
Right.
Nothing. So you don't care if it cash flows, you care if you can afford it. So you have to learn, you have to learn all of the strategies. You don't determine the strategy until you have the house. And so what I see a lot of people, like the alligators I see in a deal, is people will manipulate and lie on rental numbers to try and sell me a deal because they only understand rental numbers. So what they'll do is they'll go, okay, I got a 3% rate. This house has a $2,100 PITI, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. I go to Rentometer and it can only be rented for $1,900. Oh my gosh, dang it. This is not a deal. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lie on my marketing and I'm going to go put it in Pace's Facebook group or email it out. And I'm going to tell people you can rent it for $2,400.
I've seen that be done
all the time. And the reason being is in the smart investors. Okay. This is what the smart investors will do. I had somebody send me a deal this morning. One of my community members, they go, regular rental, it loses $400. If you sell it on seller finance, you'll make $300. If you sell it, if you do it on a midterm rental, you'll make this. If you do short-term rental, you'll make $1,000. If you do this, you'll, and I'm like, that's somebody that gets what the investor is going to look at and go, what can I do with this house that has a good rate? I'm putting almost no money down on. And so if you don't understand the highest and best use of the property, learn that before you go market, because you're going to have a hard time selling your deal if you're not appealing to the buyer and letting them know, like, hey, here's the potential of this property. They'll look through your email and they'll go, this person's lying, and they'll delete your email and they won't look at your next deal. That's how investors work.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And I've seen it done. I've seen it done. And I know they were lying because I sold them the house, and I know it won't do what they're saying it'll do. Anyway, Pace, thank you so much for coming on. Do you have any parting advice for any of our listeners? And also, where can they find you and follow you and buy your book, et cetera?
Yeah, if you buy my book, Wealth Without Cash, I think I make 21 cents on it. Bigger Pockets makes the majority of it, which I'm glad they do. I love my relationship with Bigger Pockets. It's our book, Wealth Without Cash. We are the number one selling book of the, their number one fastest selling launch of Bigger Pocket history is mine. And I'll tell you why. The book sucks, but, okay, but, because I had to make it really basic.
Yeah.
I'm not super proud of the book, but what I love, the book has like 700 five-star reviews. People love it for some reason. But what I love about the book is I put a video companion guide in the back of the book. You scan a QR code and it gives you an entire 18-hour creative finance course for free. And that is game-changing. I take you on appointments. I break it down chronologically. It's called a video companion guide. So what I did is I did 1 hour for every chapter in the book. And so every chapter has an extra hour of like video content attached to it. And it's all free. It's in the book. The QR code's like the last page. So that book's great. And it's like 16 bucks on Amazon or something like that. But YouTube or like our TV show on A&E, you can go watch that kind of stuff if you want to watch lame fix and flip shows. But parting advice. My number one asset that I have is my circle of friends. It's my number one asset by a long shot. They inspire me. They hold me accountable. I learn from them. Most of them are mentors I've hired. Okay. I've hired people to get over things. I was a blue collar guy for my entire life up until 11 years ago. And if you told me I was ever going to hire a coach to teach me how to do something, I'd be like, oh, scam artist, scam. This is a scam. That was me in my 20s. My dad taught me that. That's my dad's mindset. And he always had this quote of, if it's meant to be, it's up to me, which means you're a lonely shithead your entire life. That's what that means. And I started hiring coaches when I was 30, and it was the cheat code. And then these coaches become my friends. Hire a damn coach. If you don't hire coaches to cut through the crap, like if you want to go do short-term rentals, I'm sure Avery has something. I'm sure you coach people and walk people through things. Stop trying to navigate in the dark by yourself. Hire the person that's five steps ahead of you. And instead of you taking 2 years to do it, it'll take you 6 months. Instead of it taking, 10 years to do something, it'll take you 3 years. It's the cheat code. And what I see people do, like, let's say this year, I wanted to get better at storytelling this year. So I went and hired a coach, $55,000 for a coach. And people are like, that is crazy that you would pay that kind of money. I'm like, no, it's crazy to me that I have a goal I want to accomplish and that I'm willing to go through an arduous journey of doing it by myself for the next 3, 4, 5 years, but I could get it done by paying 55 grand in 1 year and getting proximity and a friendship with somebody that's way better than me. It's crazy to me that you're willing to spend 4 years of your freaking life in the dark, stumbling, bumbling with no guidance. That tells me that you only value each one of those years of your life at roughly $12,000 to $13,000 in comparison to my $55,000 I paid. All day long, I'm paying for cheat codes. The cheat code is paying for the shortcut. Get better relationships, hire coaches, and know what you want. A lot of people don't even know what they want. You start talking to them and they're like, what do I want, Avery? Dude, will you tell me what I want? So write it down. What do you want? In a perfect world, what does your life look like? Write it down and say, if I want this life, what has to be true in order for me to have that? Write those things down and then go hire people to help you get those things. Pay for the cheat code. Go fast.
All right. Yes. Sign up for Short Term Shop Plus and Paces community.
How do you get to Short Term Shop Plus? How do they get there?
So hit our website, shorttermshop.com, and it'll be right there front and center. We're actually just launching a new round this month.
Boom. Guys, there you go. There's the cheat code right there. I would just go and join Avery's world and go here. And here's what's cool. You're not just going to get help from Avery, but there's going to be other people in there that have things and resources and experiences, maybe geographically where their investing is where you want to invest. And Avery might not be investing in those areas and you need that relationship. The greatest thing about a mentorship that I love is it is the greatest filtering device you could have ever asked for, right? If there's ever a point in your life where you go, I wish I knew people that were like-minded, they wanted more for themselves, they weren't complainers, they weren't spending their time talking about politics and all the crap, and they wanted to do short-term rental, and they wanted to do short-term rental in my area, I wish I had those friends. Well, guess what? Avery created a filtering device that finds those people, brings them into her world, and allows you to build relationships with those types of people. She did all the hard work for you. There's the answer. The answer is go join that. Again, how do I get there?
On our website, shorttermshop.com. It will be right there front and center for you.
Boom. There's the cheat code. Avery, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on, Pace.